The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 1 Podcast.
Final day of February has arrived. It's the shortest month of the year. That's why it's over tonight. We say hello to you on a busy afternoon. A lot happening. Some news about Jeremy Pruitt that we've been, well, actually, we don't know that much about it. This is what we do know. Tennessee football coaches and administrators have committed NCAA violations. It looks like four various coaches and administrators have agreed. Jeremy Pruitt is the big enchilada here. We don't know very much about that. It's pretty obvious he's still in the midst of it all. Otherwise, he perhaps would have been at Alabama already. Meanwhile, Glenn Schumann is staying at Georgia. Seems like he just got there, but he was wooed by the Eagles, who lost its D.C. to the NFL. He'll stay at Georgia. Todd Monken, of course, left to go to the Ravens. Well, it's still about 2 months away, but the mock draft is showing a lot of activity. And if you're an Alabama fan, you're going, yeah, I see Bryce Young at number one, Will Anderson at number three. Those are our guys. How about C.J. Stroud could go number two. Jalen Carter. Many have wondered if he's not the best player in the draft. He's down at the number four position. Levitt's at five. Anthony Richardson, whose career at Florida was somewhat of a blur, he is projected number nine. And we welcome in our first guest, and that is the one and only Connor O'Gara from Saturday Down South. He's taking a look at some storylines in the SEC. Yeah, camps are open in some places and about to be open at others. And I know we've been knee-deep in basketball, and obviously we're one day away from March. But, Connor, thanks for joining us. By the way, before we get to the storylines, is there anything to read from this Tennessee story about Jeremy Pruitt, or is that to be determined as best you can tell?
Yeah, when I read Ross Dellinger's story in Sports Illustrated, I was kind of searching for the Pruitt angle of this to see if we were looking at a potential show cause for him, but it looks like that is still TBD. So, yeah, I would say right now it's kind of put a pin in it and wait and see what's going to happen with Jeremy Pruitt in the NCAA.
Okay, enough of that. I felt like I had to ask. I mean, otherwise the critics would have said I didn't do my job. Let's get to the juicy stuff, Connor. You've taken a deep dive into many, many different camps. So what are you looking for this spring?
How about Robert Patrick Petrino, the new offensive coordinator at Texas A&M, the guy that I'd say is a household name in college football, just football in general, is going to be working with Jimbo Fisher. And Jimbo Fisher is not in total control of his offense for the first time since, 1998? I mean, first time in 25 years that he is not going to be the point person on the offensive side of the ball. And meanwhile, Bobby Petrino, a guy who has only been a head coach for the last two decades of his career, how is that dynamic going to play out? I don't know that we're going to get a whole lot in spring. Usually vibes are pretty good in spring. You're not seeing a whole lot of those blow-ups. If you are, maybe that's a sign of some pretty bad things to come. But I'm fascinated to see the way that that plays out. And, of course, A&M fans want to know, can Bobby Petrino develop Connor Wigman? Can he get this offense to a place that it hasn't been in the last 2 years? And can Jimbo Fisher ultimately relinquish control and kind of follow the way of Josh Heupel and Lane Kiffin in terms of the offensive-minded head coaches who have been able to give up some of those play-calling duties, and they've been better for it?
Let me move to it. By the way, I'm really intrigued. I did not know Bobby Petrino's middle name, nor did anyone care. Let me get to Georgia for a second. You've heard the critics, and it seems like I don't know if these are only Alabama fans or Georgia fans, but a lot of people are gnashing teeth and going apoplectic over Mike Bobo's hiring. Others have said, hey, you know, compared to some of the other places, like maybe even Alabama, they got a much younger coach, perhaps it's a good deal. What do you think about Bobo at UGA?
I wasn't crazy about it. I rode in Saturday Down South and heard about it from plenty of Georgia fans that I thought it was a rare misstep from Kirby Smart, and I wonder if it's going to be the difference between Georgia winning a third consecutive national championship, becoming the first team to do that since good old Ed Widseth at 1936 Minnesota. And I think it's one of those things that if you're a Georgia fan, you're looking at it saying, all right, but it's all about continuity. We've got so much more talent than before when Bobo was here. But I think this is the best assistant job in college football that's available. Total autonomy on that side of the ball, returning to the number one team in the country, two-time defending national champions, a lot of talent to work with, most notably a certain Brock Bowers, who might end up being the best tight end in the history of college football by the time his career is done. And he hired Mike Bobo, a guy that has failed at his last two jobs, both of which were in the SEC, and you can kind of debate the merits of what he did at Colorado State, a guy who hasn't had a top 60 scoring offense since 2017. I don't know a whole lot of people that get highly coveted jobs like that when the best thing on their resume was something that happened 9-10 years ago. And I'm not saying that Mike Bobo and Georgia are going to have a 7-5 season. I don't want this coming back to me in a few months, but I do look at this and wonder, is this going to be the difference in them winning a national championship? I thought Todd Monken was the best assistant hire of the playoff era. I thought he was masterful, and I thought he was the absolute difference in Georgia getting over the hump and being able to win a national championship. And I don't think it's as easy as just simply saying, oh, Mike Bobo is going to step in there, do exactly what Todd Monken did, because that's taking away from the greatness of what he was able to do from a schematic standpoint. So yeah, I mean, Georgia's going to score a ton of points. They're probably going to end up having a top 20 offense, but do I have less confidence in them winning a third consecutive national championship? Absolutely.
Are you more impressed with Nick Saban hiring Tommy Rees from Notre Dame?
I wouldn't say I'm more impressed.
Hold on. You said it was a misstep by Kirby Smart. I'm just trying to figure out, is this a misstep by Nick Saban as well?
I think Nick Saban, at least, I like what Nick Saban did from a process standpoint better. To have 10 minutes in between of Todd Monken after Seth Emerson comes out with a report, or Seth Emerson had the report that Mike Bobo was going to be replacing Todd Monken, like 10 minutes after we found out via the Ravens official account that he was going to be their new OC, to have someone in waiting as opposed to actually going through the process and hearing the people that Nick Saban had interviewed. I like the way in which Nick Saban went about his process a little bit more than Kirby Smart, who, let's be honest, like, yes, Mike Bobo knows Georgia better than anyone, and he's been there for what? I mean, a quarter century of his life. But at the same time, it's Kirby Smart's college roommate, and this is somebody that he's really close to. Obviously, somebody that was an offensive analyst last year at Georgia and understands the way that Todd Monken likes to be able to operate and hopefully continue that. But I think Nick Saban actually going through a hiring process and opening this up
Connor,
to the masses
to
is better.
But I mean, it wasn't like a hiring process. I mean, he got turned down by two or three other people before he got to Tommy Rees.
I think you at least still see what's out there, though, okay. In my opinion. I like going about it in that sort of way. And Georgia fans will disagree. Trust me, I've heard all about it for the last couple of weeks. But I think you at least kind of have to see what's out there. I would have loved to have heard, hey, what happens if, you know, Dan Mullen says no to the Georgia job? Or, you know, hearing, all right, what about Cliff Kingsbury? Yeah, Joe Brady loves the NFL. We know that. What about making him a potential offer? Brian Johnson just got promoted to offensive coordinator of the Philadelphia Eagles. What does he think about the idea of coming to Georgia? I think that there was at least a process that could have been, you know, Kirby Smart could have gone about, and Georgia fans are saying, well, he went about that process
Connor,
a year ago.
I hate to keep harping on this. I feel like I'm on CNN with the Murdoch trial, but I'm just curious, though, because Monken had interviewed with a couple of NFL clubs. It was pretty obvious he was leaving. So, I mean, I'll let Kirby Smart speak for himself, but I don't feel like – it's not like he just rolled out of bed and called his college roommate without having thought about it. I mean, you're not suggesting that, are you?
No, I'm not suggesting that. I think he definitely thought about it. I think there's a difference, though, in having someone in mind as a replacement as opposed to opening this job up to the masses and seeing what that market looks like. I think there's something to be said for that and seeing what's out there and being willing to be turned down. I mean, a lot of people get turned down. Like there are a ton of jobs that open up in which we hear, oh, this name, you know, is rumored for this. And then, you know, we hear Scott Woodward going after all these big fish and he gets turned down. It's like, yeah, people like that don't really care. I thought Kirby Smart had something really intriguing to be able to offer. And if we had heard that Mike Bobo was going to any other SEC job, like what if Nick Saban had hired Mike Bobo? How would Georgia fans have felt about that? How would South Carolina fans or Auburn fans have felt about that? I think that's the thing that's worth remembering. And obviously, you know, not everybody is going to be able to succeed at the same high level at every specific place. But I just thought that there was maybe a more thorough way to go through this process.
Okay, we're clear. We have booked we have booked this, and the next time I see Kirby Smart, I am going to make sure, Connor, that he consults you the next time he conducts a coaching search. So let me get to Alabama here. We've already mentioned Tommy Rees. So what about the quarterback battle?
I like Ty Simpson in this. I really do. And look, I'm trying not to put too much stock into what we saw from Jalen Milroe, who did some electrifying things in a limited sample size when Bryce Young was out. But the thing that kind of worries me about Jalen Milroe, who was higher in the pecking order this past year, was the pocket presence. And you need to be able to have that pocket presence to execute this offense that Tommy Rees wants to be able to run. Yeah, Alabama might try and be a little bit more predictable. They might try and run the football more. Ty Simpson was a 1,000-yard rusher in high school. This guy isn't just some pocket passer who's going to sit back there and not see any sort of running lanes. The guy can move pretty well. And based on what we've seen from him, a former 5-star recruit, I think there's a lot of potential there that he can do everything that this offense asks for. And I question if Jalen Milroe has the throwing aspect really down. And I think that, you know, he can make strides this offseason and he can ultimately show that. But I think this is a true battle. And I think it's the first true battle at quarterback that we've seen at Alabama since 2018.
Finally, let's get to Florida, where the news always seems to be bad lately concerning Billy Napier. Is there some reason for this program to look down the road and feel good, or are they mired in a malaise down there?
They're searching for it right now. There's no doubt about it. And you see, to lose three assistants to the NFL in, 48 hours? I mean, there are some people that are going to look at that and say, oh, Billy Napier's got a culture problem. Everybody's leaving him left and right. I don't think it's as simple as that. I think these opportunities open up. And sometimes just the timing of it just lines up in a way that makes you look really bad. And that could be exactly what's playing out. But if your spin zone right now for Florida is as simple as, oh, well, this is all the rebuilding that Billy had to do in the wake of Dan Mullen's, you know, final year there, I think you're looking at this with maybe a little bit too much of a Gator perspective. And trying to realize, like, you still need to be able to do some things in year two to show that you're moving in the right direction. Billy Napier talked all about that support staff, and that's been such a big point of emphasis. He needs dudes. Like, he just needs players at this point, and they need to show that they can actually develop players. What happened to the vintage Florida defenses that we got so used to seeing? I mean, pre-2020, it was like a foregone conclusion that Florida was automatically going to have some sort of top 20, top 30 defense, and it just seems like that has totally fallen off, and it's put a lot of pressure on Billy Napier in the early part of his time there. But yeah, I mean, I'm not one to sit here and make sweeping generalizations about year one coaches. I think we do that way too much, but they need to be able to build some momentum in year two to feel like they made the right hire and that this is going to be the right plan moving forward.
Connor O'Gara with a lot of opinions here as we begin the program. Many, many thanks, Connor, as we tell you what we're going to be doing the rest of this afternoon. Blake Topmeyer on the Pruitt situation at Tennessee. What do we know? Brad Crawford a little bit later on. And as we get ready for March Madness tomorrow, March begins, Pratt Bradley will join us late in the show. And your phone calls at 855-242-7285. I have a feeling some dog fans may have a comment or two about Connor O'Gara calling Kirby Smart's hiring of Mike Bobo a misstep. We're coming right back.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%. Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at hims.com/paul. That's hims.com/paul for your personalized ED treatment options. hims.com/paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Being here, and Johnny is first up from the calls. Hello, Johnny. Good afternoon.
Paul, how you doing?
Johnny, we're doing great. Thank you very much.
I'm actually very amused. I'm actually on the way to Athens for the Georgia basketball game tonight. Who is Connor? Who is this guy, man? You got to be
Connor,
kidding me.
Connor O'Gara is somebody with an opinion about every single thing under the sun.
Okay. Is he with the Athletic? Who's he with?
He's with Saturday Down South.
Okay. His daddy must own Saturday Down South, I guess. I don't know.
Matter of fact, I think he does.
let's get to the point. Okay. I'm a diehard dog. Georgia games all my life. And, back in the day, I wasn't one of the biggest Bobo fans, but Bobo over the years when he was in Athens, number one, he's a great recruiter. This is totally different, going to be a coordinator. But, you know, he's been in the box with Monken for the last 2 years. If you watch when they show Monken in the box in the Georgia game, Bobo's right there side by side with him, okay? So surely Bobo's learned a lot from Todd Monken.
Yeah, and Johnny, listen, Connor's entitled to his opinion, even if he's wrong. But Bobo is eminently qualified, and I really don't think you can blame Bobo for the failures that occurred in 1 year at both Auburn and South Carolina. He didn't create those situations. He inherited them. Hey, thank you very much for the call. Appreciate it. Dustin is in Tulsa. Hello, Dustin.
Hey there, Paul. How are you, bud?
We are doing well. Thank you very much.
Well, man, I'm surprised to see that you're sitting comfortably, especially with the way the AJ jammed his nose up your backside the last couple of days. That was, those calls are getting tough to listen to. Paul, you're just the goat. Paul, you're the best ever.
By the way, I think that's the best way to get it. That's a sure ticket on the show if you say that.
Well, Paul, I do think you are the best, but, you know, I'd prefer to, you know, not throw it at you all the time. Speaking of AJ, that's the reason I couldn't call in yesterday. I actually caught the red eye back from Pell City, and I was just exhausted. I had to reconcile things with his sister. We were finally able to get it down to Copacetic when I told her she could have an extra order of shrimp scampi. So she agreed to come around, and I think we're gonna make it, Paul. I think we're gonna be a power couple.
Dustin, I don't want to get in the way of your joke material here. I didn't realize I was supposed to come in there.
Yeah, pitter-patter, Paul. I need a little help here. I need you to throw it back, and then, you know, we'll go back and forth. I guess not. Hey, on a serious note, thanks for having Nolan on yesterday. That really took me back, man. That was fun.
I find him to be one of the most intriguing figures in SEC history. The guy is so rich in his knowledge, and he doesn't equivocate. He doesn't apologize for anything. He is what he stood for and what he went. In fact, you know, his relationship with the school was pretty ugly at the end. I'm really glad to see things have mostly calmed down.
Yeah, it's nice that they reconciled. It's good to see his name on the court because, I mean, you know, we went from Barnhill to Bud Walton, and that was the year that we won the national championship. But I don't think Arkansas basketball would be what it was, certainly, and I don't think it would be what it is today without Nolan Richardson. He was the right man in the right place at the right time. And I think those teams are some of the best transitional teams ever. I mean, they had basketball IQ, but they also would just run you out of the gym. I mean, while they were there, Fayetteville was Lob City. It was just incredible.
Yeah, Dustin, I thought his explanation of 40 Minutes of Hell was really intriguing. Phil is in New York. Hey, Phil, go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Paul.
Thank you.
I wanted to just mention something, and then I'll hang up. It's the Brandon Miller's behavior that bothers me, because I don't think he has any empathy or feeling for anybody, and he just goes plays basketball and that's it. There's no other concern in his life. So that's all I wanted to say, Paul. Thank you.
John is up next in Louisville. Hey, John. Good afternoon.
Hey, good afternoon. No disrespect to our Phil, but I thought we could get the first hour under our belt without Alabama coming up.
John, I did my best.
I know. Hey, I was going to talk to you about the ACC and Pac-12, but first, my daughter happened to watch the show yesterday with me, and we have our top four picks for your caller bracketology. Would you like them?
Absolutely. Of course.
Yeah. She loves J.K. That's somebody she didn't see before or hear before. She thinks he's smooth as silk. Number three is Lovable Larry, a.k.a. Tallboy. Number two is Handsome, Humble, and Honest Joe. And that phone call where you asked him about prison is a collector's item. And then number one is still the champion legend, who she agrees compares well with Elmer Gantry. You know the movie and the Sinclair Lewis book, right?
Correct.
Yeah. He was a rogue evangelist who had a taste for money and woman. But I want to talk to you. And by the way, she thinks you're the ultimate DJ, the one that pushes the phone buttons and the people's buttons at the same time.
Oh, thank you.
Anyways, on the ACC, Paul, I love David Hale. By the way, he writes a great article every Sunday after the football games, college games.
I think David is one of the more underrated people.
Absolutely.
He's got a great style.
Yeah, and it was kind of cute yesterday when you were kind of coaching him to mention that four-letter word, ESPN.
Oh, yeah.
But he finally pulled it out of him.
Yeah, I always find it interesting when we're talking to guests from ESPN about things that directly involve you. And I guess it's easier for me, John, because I don't have 35 or 40 years ahead of myself like some of these people. So,
Or speaking of that, Paul, you don't have 13 years more of the grant of rights. And
no, you're right.
There's no way they're going to get out of that. ESPN has those.
It's a fun story to talk about, but FSU is going to be exactly where it is.
ESPN has them by the short hairs, and by the way, no other teams like Boston U are going to give up any portion of their share.
No, absolutely not.
Of the media money. Here's the Pac-12. My thoughts. I think it's reaching a point of no return in the next month or so. If they don't get a media rights deal, I think it's going to go into dissolution. I think the Big Ten will pick up at least two teams because they need some regional players over there, such as the Bell Cows, Oregon, and Washington. But I think academically wise, they'll add Stanford and Cal. And then as far as Notre Dame, I don't see them coming over. I think they're stuck up and they're stuck on their independent status. And quite frankly, I think that's their only path to the CFP. Going forward.
Well, and John, because of CFP expansion, Notre Dame has less incentive to get into the ACC or Big Ten or somewhere else. We head to the break. We're 30 minutes in. Connor O'Gara joins us from the beginning. Had some strong comments about Kirby Smart's hiring of Mike Bobo. Underwhelmed by it. Your reaction continues right after this.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
Back, Matt from San Antonio.
AJ, that's his name. You know why? And the reason why I'm one of the best callers, Paul? Everything about me, like I said, my CC brother, is real. I never lied on this show. Everything about my life is a lie. AJ is not a fake dick. He's a bunch of fake, wannabe loser chump who thinks he can join the ring with me. And I'm Muhammad Ali. He's an upstate fighter. I'm just going to mop the floor with him. He's nothing. He's a loser. That's the reason why AJ should stop calling this show and let the real callers be part of it and then go cry back home to his mommy. And we're not going to go 8-4, AJ. We're going to go 10-2 or 9-3. And Arkansas fans are delusional bunch of idiots. We ain't going to go 11-1. We're going to mop the floor with them. Paul.
Well said, Matt. Thank you very much. Jason is up next in Georgia. Hello, Jason.
Hey, Paul, how you doing?
We're doing great. Thank you.
The Saturday Down South guy there, you know what they say about opinions? Everybody has one just like something else that everybody has. And he's entitled to his opinion, but I think he's wrong. I think not only is Mike Bobo more than qualified, like you said, South Carolina and Auburn, you can just throw that out the window. And I think there's something else people need to think about, too. I don't think Mike Bobo's going anywhere for years. So you can build something stable long-term, and dogs should keep on rolling. Go dogs.
Thank you very much. In addition, he's got great contacts with coaches in the state. He understands the system. There's no transition. He's already there. Kirby Smart is well aware he could have gone out and hired a flash coach, but he clearly felt he didn't need it. And it's just amazing to me how everyone is harping on that hire and then dismissing the rest of the hires as being great. Crawford is in Tennessee. Hello, Crawford. You are on the air.
Yes, Paul. Thank you very much for allowing me to come on the air. I have been doing some research on the internet as far as college football stats, and I come up with Tom Monken versus Mike Bobo, and these are the stats from the college website that I got this from. starting with Todd Monken, his offense for 3 years averaged 37.33 points per game with 5- and 4-star players, while the defense allowed averaging 14.83 points per game. Now, OC Mike Bobo, last three seasons, 2012, 2013, and 14, offenses averaged 38.6 points per game with 4- and 3-star players, with the defense allowing an average of 23.1 points per game, a deficit of 8 points versus Todd Monken's defense as far as Georgia's defense. Note, that's a 1.2 difference. Now, not only that, time of possession, the 2020, 21, and 22 offensive time of possession, they had the ball 2 minutes and 41 seconds longer than the 2012, 2013, and 14 teams. That means you got more than 2 minutes more offensive playing time, but you still had 1.27 less points per game average. So all in all, the offense did better because they had to score more points to make up a difference of 8 points per game.
Well, listen, I appreciate the stats, Crawford. I don't think they mean a whole lot. I think everyone acknowledges that Bobo's offenses under Mark Richt were very good. The defenses were not. Chip is up next. Hello, Chip. Welcome to our show. Good afternoon.
Hello, Mr. Paul. Love your show and watch it every day. How about that?
I appreciate that very much. We all do.
No, I appreciate your knowledge and your insight. We've been talking a little bit about Coach Bobo today. And very frankly, and I'll ask the question and then let you answer. What is your personal opinion as far as Mr. Feinbaum himself goes, on the hiring of Coach Bobo? Your personal opinion.
I think it was a smooth decision. No, it doesn't register on the Richter scale for a wow hire because Bobo has some baggage. But I like the fact that Kirby Smart did not blink an eye. Connor said that it was as if the hire was ready to go. And the reason for that is it was ready to go. Kirby Smart probably knew as far back as 2 months ago that Monken possibly would be leaving, and I think he made the decision in a split second that he was going to elevate Bobo. And I don't think it has anything to do with him being his roommate or best friend. When you get to the level of Kirby Smart, you don't hire people out of loyalty. Not when you're playing. They're playing up on Mount Everest right now. This is not kid stuff anymore.
Mr. Paul, I agree with you on that, and to be honest with you, Bobo had a little time around Monken, and certainly and surely he learned something, wouldn't you think?
Yeah, and Chip, I think that's the most important thing, that he understands what Kirby Smart is doing right now. But I think it's blatantly ridiculous to criticize him for what he did at Colorado State as a head coach and what he did in two quick hits as an assistant coach. Listen, you can take the most talented person at any field and put him in a bad position, and they will struggle. I can assure you. I've worked at bad places before, and no matter how hard you try, there's only so much change you can affect when you don't have a good infrastructure. He went to South Carolina as well. I think it was the COVID year. And Will Muschamp was DOA. He got fired because Will Muschamp got fired. And at Auburn, I think he was a bad fit. He was working for an offensive-minded coach, and he did not have the players, and the system blew up, of course. If I remember correctly, they were down to their second- or third-string quarterback at the end of the year.
I think you're right on that. And to be honest with you, this is just my personal opinion. I think Bobo actually would be a good hire. Certainly from what all you just told me, he has had to learn a lot. And I'm like you, I don't think the Kirby would make a quick hire. I mean, we're talking about a guy that won, back-to-back natties. And, I think he put a lot of thought into it. And I think Bobo will do a good job, Mr. Paul. I appreciate you.
Thank you, Chip. Yeah, and I think it's easy. And listen, I'm not criticizing somebody else's opinion. Everybody in this field, and he's not the only one, by the way. I mean, there are plenty of people who have some doubts about Bobo. And I think some of it is just because it's convenient. A misstep. I mean, yeah, an offensive coordinator is critically important. It's very, but what kind of misstep? You look at Georgia's schedule, and I could call the plays offensively and get them probably 10 wins, and I've never called a play in my life. We'll take a break. We come back with much more right after this.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
March Madness around the corner and the bracketology on the Feinbaum Show. This is not final, by the way. I know a lot of people are jumping in saying, hey, what about this is just the committee's projection. As of Feb 28, first seeds are Legend, Jim, I-Man, Larry. Last four in, Dustin, AJ, Matt, Mitch. We talked to two of them already today, and I think they've been moved back off the they're now on the bubble. A couple of people are on the bubble, and this changes by the hour, so we will continue to update you. And let's continue, and Darren is up next. Hello, Darren.
Hi, Paul. Just quickly, I just want to say thank you for letting me get on here for the Three Stooges come in and do comments today.
Sure.
And in my opinion, it's Larry Legend and I-Man. But the main thing I just want to say to you is, hey, man, I've been in Alabama since the day I was born. And two of those fellows, if they're supposed to be true Alabama fans, they're a very big embarrassment to the Alabama nation. And the other thing I want to say is, everybody talks about Georgia and everything, and that's cool. Hey, let them win three or four in a row. I don't care. Till they actually have as many championships and wins as Alabama had through Bear Bryant and Wade Wallace, and the history goes back, and Nick Saban, then they can start talking what they talk. Who cares? And really, Paul, that's all I had to say, bud, and I appreciate you taking the call.
Thank you very, very much. Will is in North Carolina. Hello, Will.
Paul, love your show. Watch it every day, obviously. But the reason I watch is Randy. I mean, he's so intriguing.
Yeah, Will, don't get carried away.
Paul, have you seen where they're shortening college football? I mean, baseball, college football, what do you think about that?
I think it's a good idea. I mean, the game goes on forever. You cannot have four and a half hour TV games on Saturday.
You think they'll shorten the Feinbaum show?
No. They're thinking about making it 8 hours. Four is not enough.
What about ticket prices? Do you think they'll come down on them bad boys then?
No, Will. I think ticket prices are going up. Hey, thanks for the call. John is up next. Hey, John, good afternoon.
Hey, thanks for taking my call, Paul. Watch your show every day.
Thank you.
I have a question about the Alabama basketball, which is probably a number one seed and one of the top teams in the country. With Brandon Miller having possession of a gun, either in his car or in the dorm, which he provided to the person that shot the girl, how does he stay on the team? I thought it was illegal for players to have guns and drugs without being taken off the team.
I think there's some debate about whether that would be illegal. In terms of a basketball or football team or any kind of athletic team, it's really up to the coach. You can suspend somebody for any types of misconduct. So yeah, I mean, could he have been suspended for being involved indirectly in something like this? Yeah, of course he could have. Nate Oates chose not to.
Yeah, that's what surprises me. What kind of message that's going to send to everybody else if they want to have guns in their car or in their dorm room, and it's okay.
Well, I just think that the university is all in on this season. I think they viewed the situation as from a legal standpoint, and when it didn't violate any legal parameters, they stuck with the player. I think they probably thought about it, and I would like a minute by minute of the conversations between the athletic director, the head basketball coach, the player, maybe the player's attorneys. Until we know exactly what was said, I think we'll just be grasping for straws here. But I'm sure something was considered. I even believe that probably last week somebody made a recommendation. Why don't we just go ahead and suspend him now? Although, to me, that was not the time to suspend him. The time to suspend him would have been on day one.
Right. Okay, well, thank you, Paul. Really appreciate your opinion.
Thank you very, very much. David is up next. Hello, David. Good afternoon.
Hey, Paul. Good to talk to you. I got me excited about football, although I know we're coming up on March Madness. We're, looking at camps opening. And I love your analysts that you and SEC Network have.
Thank you.
And I particularly remember last year, Chris Doering did a great job. I don't remember his picks, but I know he spot on called Florida 6-6, and he could have been, the alumni and overinflated the record, but good analysis that he knew that they still need to work their way through. And I think, by and large, he's probably about 80% accurate. Of course, he's not going to get every game right, otherwise he would own Vegas. But he was right on. I think he had Alabama with at least one loss. Nobody had Alabama with two losses before Thanksgiving, so let's just throw that out the window. So I just thought he did great. And when he comes up next year to do his picks, it'd be nice for him to review what he did in 2022 and I think people would be impressed by the way he looked at it.
Yeah, I'll do that, David. Thank you very much for the kind comments. We're heading to a break. We're back for three more hours.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network, beginning at 3 Eastern.